can say.
Blog Talk Radio.
There's no chance for anything next week at all. Any day at all, though. Okay. New Year's is New Year's Day is Wednesday the 1st, right? And you want to try for the 2nd at 3:30. At this time, it's open. And I'm putting it down, and you should put it down too. Right. Now, does it matter? Right. So, are you actually working Wednesday the 1st? No. Okay. You're certainly not working on Christmas. So it doesn't. So it doesn't help for next week at all if it was in the best Israel office. Because I can go either place. Okay. So that's even worse. All right. So then let me grab that one. Okay, thank you very much. Right. Thanks, you too. Yes, this is Adrienne Berg. I'm a patient of Dr. Fox. Elise, could we? Is there any chance of seeing her next week? And when do you reopen? January 2. Would there be any opening on that day? 9:15:48. Adrienne Berg, B-E-R-G. I have a little growth that's bothering me, and I don't even know if it is anything, to be honest with you. I just wanted to look at it. I'm going away until the middle of February. Well, that's the problem. I'm supposed to leave that week, like the 3rd. Friday. I may even leave Thursday night. So. So it would be really cool if there was a morning appointment. You know, I just don't know what her day looks like. But not on the 2nd, huh? And when? What do you have on the 3rd? I'm going to grab that, and we're making our arrangements now. If I absolutely have to be away, I'll call you and let you know, okay? Thank you very much. Happy holidays. to record on that Washington version.
Following up the parables, where's the money?
So I'm going to close the door just for.
And
you want me to? What should I press before I start to speak?
Hello, hello, hello. This is Adrienne Berg, and this is a little bit of a review of something with which you might not be familiar, but you should be, and that is the Washington Conference on Aging. It takes place about every 10 years, and let me explain what it does for you and what you could do for it. The very first time that the Washington Conference on Aging took place was 1961. There were conferences in 1971, 81, 95, 2005, and 2015. That's the one that I attended. The president was President Obama, and I'll tell you all about it in a moment. This particular conference was really engendered by the Older Americans Act, and that's legislation, congressional legislation. And so the format for those conferences until 2015 really was set by the legislature, and it was pretty formal. People were determined as to who should be there, who should not be there, who would be invited. It was not a free-for-all of public opinion. But what it did throughout the years, starting in 1961, was set the forward agenda, or what the government called the advanced agenda, on what we're thinking about when it comes to aging legislation. But something changed in 2015, and that's what I want to let you know about. The Older Americans Act was not reenacted. Now, it has been, but it wasn't at that time. And therefore, there was no way, there was no vehicle for the legislature to create the pro forma protocol for the conference. Would there be a conference? Well, that was up to the president. And in this case, the executive branch, President Obama, decided, yes, there should be a conference, and the executive branch would create the protocol because it was no longer in the hands of the legislature. So President Obama did something very interesting. He held 6 or 7 town halls in places like Boston and Colorado to hear what the folks thought should be determined and discussed at the conference. He also opened the door to several types of journalists like me that might not have been invited under stricter legislative rules. And because I was a New York Times Age Boom fellow, I was invited along with several other journalists of big newspapers and television and radio. Along with us came 225 other delegates from all walks of life that dealt with aging. Not only were they nonprofits that you would expect, like the AARP and the National Council on Aging, but also invited was the private sector. And guess who was specifically invited? Uber and Airbnb. Why? Because the sharing economy was extremely important to the boomer. Sharing rides, sharing houses, sharing travel. These are all the types of things that would allow us to live better as we got older, and there were plenty of businesses that were adding to the gross national product of our country by being part of the sharing economy. And the next conference for the aging will take place in 2025. Who will be president? Well, we don't know. How will it be formatted by the legislature? Well, we don't know. But let me tell you in 2015 exactly what happened and let you be a fly on the wall at this conference. There were four agendas set. In this case, it was the executive branch, President Obama's group, that did so. One was retirement security. And, of course, the big question was, would Social Security be there? I'll give you the bottom line in a moment. The second was healthy aging. What was this country going to do so that there was age equality in terms of health care? And you know, of course, that President Obama had the Affordable Care Act, and that was all part of the discussion. Then there were the long-term services and supports. What happens when communities disintegrate, when families are far away, people are living longer? Well, the Older Americans Act remained a priority, and there was certainly a discussion about making sure that it would continue, even though it was on hiatus at the moment. And finally, an area that had rarely been discussed in prior conferences for the aging, and that was elder justice, scams, elder abuse, etc. So let me tell you how some of those things played out and what you can do about the future of the Washington Conference for the Aging. With regard to Social Security, as I mentioned in our book, retirement income explosion, Social Security is not on the firmest of footing because of how long we are living. Longevity itself requires that more checks go out to more people for a longer period of time. And fewer folks are paying into the system. This is something that President Obama had to address, and here are his words. For everyone already in the system, that means people who are already collecting Social Security, there is complete security until the year 2043. Now, in 2020, for those of you who expect to live another 23 years, and remember, our expectations of living longer to 90 are pretty good. So even if in your 70s, you may be concerned about Social Security running out. If you're in your 60s, you'd be very concerned. If you're a young person like my kids, age 27 and 37, you don't think you're going to have it in the first place. Well, the fact is that the discussions had to do with creating full Social Security checks later and later in life. That was one alternative. Taxing Social Security more for those who are continue to work, even though we are working longer in years, into the 70s and even the 80s. And possibly means testing it, meaning if people have greater wealth, it might cut down on their Social Security. The last one being the least palatable politically of any of the choices. Nevertheless, we can sit back and we can feel that the kind of Social Security we're receiving, particularly if we are already in our retirement collecting years, is fairly safe until the year 2043. That does not mean that there's no problem. Only a year later, in 2016, the Social Security fund for certain recipients was already used up. The people got their money, but they didn't get it from the Social Security Trust Fund. They got it from the general obligations of the United States government. In other words, our usual treasury. So we're hoping for some genius to come along and make the right decisions about making sure Social Security is secure and putting the security back into the system. The second thing was social justice. Social justice did make a change. For most scams, for most injuries, and even for financial abuse by a family member to an elder, in addition to physical abuse, it's the local government that is in charge, the state and the state court system. But no longer. Certain aspects of crimes against the elderly are now federal crimes, very much like hate crimes can be. And one can be federally prosecuted by the Attorney General's Office of the United States of America. So that was certainly a change. a refocusing on the importance and the incredible numbers of scams, physical and financial abuse for elderly folks. The third, as we mentioned, was understanding the sharing economy. Well, it certainly didn't go away. 5 years later, some of the biggest companies around are the sharing economy companies. Airbnb and Uber have competition, perhaps unexpected, but they are definitely flourishing. And finally, healthcare. We do not have a great record when it comes to longevity healthcare. What do I mean by that? The United States spends actually more money per person, per capita, on healthcare than most other first world countries, and far more than second and third world countries. But our track record isn't good. The amount of extra years healthy that we have for the amount of money we spend does not put us at the top of the list. We're just not at the top of the list for the amount of money it costs us to prolong lives in a healthy way. Part of it has to do with how little of that money goes for prevention. Part of it has to do, believe it or not, with our own health habits, because we are not a thin, lean nation. We are an obese nation, and that's getting worse and worse. And also part of it has to do with how much our pharmaceutical companies need to spend to create innovation. And so it is simply easier for them to go to other countries to innovate. We are making that better all the time. I personally have attended meetings at the United Nations where this issue has come up. I personally have spoken to groups like Aging Analytics that are giving the analytics to the folks in Washington, D.C. so that they can focus on the fact that we're not getting value for our money many, many times. But what can we do about it? What can you do about it? What can I do about it? What can our book, The Retirement Income Explosion, do about it? Well, two things. First of all, we can write to our congressmen. We can tell them that we do care about what's going to happen in 2025 at the Washington Conference on Aging. We can tell them we know it exists. We want to hear what the next administration has to say about advanced issues of aging. We're watching them. We see you. They will respond. The second thing we can do is we can tell the media. If you listen to a podcast, if you read a book, if you read a magazine, if you watch television or streaming TV or YouTube channels that have anything to do with health, with aging, with personal finance, with elder law, or any of the topics that might be covered in the Washington Conference on Aging, you can let the editors and producers know that you care about what's going on there and that they should cover it. I wager that very few people listening to me now have ever even heard of the conference. And despite the amount of work that the Obama administration did and other administrations did to promote that conference and to let people know about it, there was very little coverage. I can tell you that from firsthand knowledge. I was there, behind the cameras, watching to see how many journalists took up the invitation to come to the conference. And compared to many, many other types of conferences I've attended, of lesser stature, of less meaning, of less impact on the American public, there were very few journalists covering this. It was quite under the radar. So you let your congressman, your senator, your favorite broadcaster know that you are watching what's going on. And believe me, between now and 2025, they too will be watching, caring, and looking at it. So believe it or not, I'm raising your consciousness so you can raise theirs. In this audio seminar, you will be hearing about play money, P-L-A-Y, passive, lifelong, always in your control, and yielding enough. It's a new way of thinking about retirement planning, or what I call longevity planning. I was surprised myself because I recorded this quite some time ago to see how much it dealt with issues of longevity and how relevant it is today. What I'll ask you to forgive is the references to the Longevity Club, a variety of different websites, and other ways that you can communicate and learn more, because those have been replaced by what you're listening to now, the Retirement Income Explosion website. But one thing has not changed. You will hear me suggest that you communicate with me to ask questions, to learn more, to tell me what's bothering you, and that is still available to you. So rather than going to the websites or taking the action suggested in our broadcast, you simply go to adrianberg.com. Contact Adrian. It's right there on our website. Ask me your questions. Suggest the problems that you think we should be dealing with. And you'll also have an opportunity to speak to me on the air, just as you did long ago when we first recorded Play Money. Now, enjoy. Hello, hello, hello. This is Adrian Berg with a word about cash flow insurance. Now, in our book, The Retirement Income Explosion, we make two points that are a little bit different than most financial planning books might make. One is that we're not really doing retirement planning. We're doing longevity planning. That means inflation is more important. That means continuity and guarantees are more important. And that means planning for longer is much more important. The second point we make is that it's not how much money you have that counts. It's how much income you have that counts. We no longer can say with any equanimity, oh, I would like to be a millionaire. Because if you are a millionaire today, you might be broke tomorrow. There's no guarantees and there is no safety in simple net worth. What is safe is what we call the golden goose, income that comes securely and steadily. Now, one of the big problems with such income, and that doesn't mean that it is not something for you to pursue, because this is where income comes from, are corporate bonds, bond funds, taking money steadily out of your IRAs or 401ks, having real estate investments that pay you income. These are all wonderful things, just like having a job and having income from your work. But they all have the same drawback. They are taxable. And if you would like to create some tax-free cash flow, one way to do that is with insurance, and it is one of the most misunderstood ways, and not one of the easiest. In this sense, you have to be insurable. So before we even think about the possibility of using cash flow insurance, we have to think about the cost of insurance. If you are diabetic, if you have other ailments that would make you insurable but give you a high rating, this may not be for you. That doesn't mean you won't have life insurance, because that's something that is necessary for your family in an emergency. But you have to weigh the cost of insurance against the cash flow tax-free benefits you would get. Every insurance illustration, by law, will tell you the cost of the insurance. And if your advisor does not explain that to you properly, you are not with the right advisor. But let's say you get over this element, as I was able to do, even at the age of 70, where I very thankfully was preferred, meaning the cost of my insurance per thousand was about as low as you could get. So if you have done the kind of self-care we talk about in our book, if you've had good genetics and your luck is there, this may be a very wonderful way to save taxes and get cash flow with a lot of flexibility. Let me explain how it works. As you will read in the book, we are talking about what the industry calls permanent insurance. That means insurance that is whole life, indexed life, universal life, not term insurance. Such insurance policies set up for you an account, and that is called the accumulated value account, as mentioned in the book, and very few folks even know they have such an account. This account takes a portion of your premium and invests it for you in that account. The rest pays for the insurance. That's why the cost of the insurance will tell you how much money of your premium is really going for an investment as well. This investment can take many forms. If you have indexed universal life, you will actually select an index. Could be the S&P 500. Some even offer foreign indexes. It could be the Dow. There are many, many other indexes that your account can be based upon. How well did they do? Well, just like a mutual fund, your insurance company will show you the past performance, which does not mean a total indicator of future results, but that's what we have to go on. The interesting part about the index or indexing system, as we write about in the book, is that once you are credited, usually every year on your anniversary date, with whatever your accumulated value account made that year based on the index, it cannot go backwards. Next year, if the index actually loses money, you will not. You may have nothing additional credited to you, but neither the premium portion in your accumulated value account nor what you earned on it will go backwards. And so you should have a fairly steady growing accumulated value account. What do you do with it? Well, there's a lot of things you can do. You could consider buying more insurance, but that is not going to help you have more income in your own life. You can make withdrawals from that account. But then, if you are withdrawing your profits, you're going to have some taxation. So there is a third selection, and that is very much under the radar for most investors. That selection is borrowing. You're actually borrowing from your own accumulated value account, but the money does not come out of that account. The amount you're allowed to borrow is based on that account, but the money actually comes from the insurance company itself, just as it would come from a bank if you were borrowing from a bank, but your collateral was your bank account. Now, you'll pay interest on that. How much? Well, there are many variables. One will depend on how long you've owned the policy. Some companies charge you no interest at all if you own the policy for 10 years or more. In the first few years, you may be paying as much as 6%, as little as 1%, depending entirely on the company. You may have a sliding scale, anywhere between year 1 and year 10. You can also, very frequently, borrow at a variable rate, depending on various indexes and bond indexes and interest indexes. And so once again, how much will the money you are borrowing from the insurance company cost you? You have to sit down and get an illustration from your advisor or your insurance agent. Do you pay this money back? Is this borrowing where there's a due date? The answer is yes and no. You yourself do not have to pay the money back. You can. If you want to put more money and release more money for more insurance, you can pay the money back. But most people don't. That is not the program in which they are advised to invest. Instead, the money is paid back from the death benefit upon their demise. Yes, it decreases the death benefit for their heirs. During their life, they have been able to create a tax-free borrowed stream of income from an insurance policy that is a permanent policy. The key to all of this, the amount of premium that's requested that you contribute, the number of years, usually at least 3 years, during which you will contribute the premium, a ballpark figure of the growth of your accumulated value account based on past performance, because that's all there is that they can base it upon, how much you could safely borrow every single year based on an actuarial table, and the policy will remain in effect, any riders that you can have and what they would cost you that might give you more money in the event that you need long-term care, the various ways that interest is calculated, and in some cases, the difference between you having a joint policy for yourself and your spouse and two separate policies, one for each, and will there be any benefit and doing things that way, depending on the health status of you and your loved one. The only way to simplify this type of investment strategy is to sit down with a willing and patient insurance agent who has been working on cash flow insurance strategies for some time. Ask these questions. Are you licensed in insurance? What is your attitude toward cash flow insurance? Do you work with CPAs and accountants who can tell me what I might be saving in taxes if I use this strategy? If I want to use money that's in my 401k or IRA and withdraw that money to pay a premium, will there be enough money in my accumulated value account to pay the tax on that withdrawal? Will this strategy reduce the required minimum distribution and the taxation with regard to that? And will that make a difference in my future? And can you compare the different types of indexes and how they performed if I simply took my premium amount and looked at the past performance of various indexes with the performance of indexing? Now, you may think that you're asking quite a bit of your insurance agent, but I assure you that the companies behind them, their management companies, have all of these illustrations at their fingertips. And with one phone call, they can clearly and effectively give you the information you need. Cash flow, tax-free, from insurance policies has been used by very wealthy people for quite a long time. But it's not impossible for folks with less of a net worth and more of an income need to capitalize on this particular and little known strategy.
Okay.
However, I don't know what happened with the phone.
Sorry, I guess. Yeah.
Okay.
you write it down for me.
I will write everything down. Just tell me now. One on the insurance, which was promised, and a little blurb for play money that you suggested we put in at this time. It's very, very easy to re-record in that. I don't want it to sound cheesy, so, but the problem is I don't know exactly where in the thing the telephone rang.
Doesn't matter. Please understand that it doesn't matter. Please understand that I can get it out.
Okay.
Please believe me.
Okay. So anyway, you got it. I don't know what you want to do now.
Are you finished now?
Yeah.
Call Sharon about tomorrow. She wants to go to the jazz concert, but she doesn't want to buy tickets, so she's not sure she can get there with time. I don't know.
Okay.
All right, just get off this thing so I can unbind myself from here. Then I'm going to go get dressed. The insurance one I may want to redo anyway. I didn't like it very much.
So yeah. I can always.